It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself in a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace number 6. This one is being recorded just before I head to the United States, and I'm actually going to Memphis. And in this past week, we've been remembering somebody who was born in Memphis, although became famous in Detroit. And that is, of course, the wonderful singer Aretha Franklin, who was considered by many to be the best singer in the world. When you read her story, it is incredibly sad. Now, I love her music in so many different ways, and I love especially the gospel aspect of it, which was a clear part of it. She was brought up in a church. Her dad was a Baptist minister, C.L. Franklin, but not a good one. Let's put it that way. He was a great orator, and yet he had numerous infidelities. She became pregnant as a young teenager, I think 13 years old, and then had another child aged 16. And you do wonder what was going on in that home. Her life actually followed the pattern of just great tragedy. Her marriage to Ted White lasted 7 years. She herself developed a drink problem, possibly a drugs problem. She had an enormous fear of flying, and there was all kinds of problems with her record company. And yet, still out of all that came this incredible music and this incredible voice. And it really is her gospel stuff that stands out the most. Stick with the United States, and let's move on to just one of the most disturbing things you will ever read, and that is the grand jury's report on the priest sex scandal, pedophilia, it's said, in Philadelphia. The bare figures are horrendous, the individual stories even more so. At least 300 predator priests over several years in this one area, at least 1,000 victims, probably many thousand more, and much of it covered up by the church. Now, the interesting thing when we hear that, we tend to say, well, pedophiles, in fact, that's how it's reported. But I've read this article, which I'll put a link to, which has a very different take on it. Most of the victims were males. Most were adolescents or young adult males. There are stories of priests who, there's one in particular, horrendous, of a priest who raped 5 girls. But the vast majority are of males. It's the same story in Honduras and in Chile, where there were gay priest sex rings. Now, bear with me a minute before you start saying, well, wait a minute, hang on. This is just, you're just having a go at homosexuality here. No, I'm giving you some facts and how you interpret them. Well, you do have to think about it. There was another report in 2007, I think, called the John Jay Report, a study into abuse in the priesthood. 80% of it was also homosexual. 96 of 4,329 priests, and man, even that figure, 4,329 priests who were offenders, but only 96 of them would have been classed as pedophiles. Most are what we would call predators and were homosexual predators. But it's even worse than that. Dr. Richard Fitzsimmons, a psychiatrist, says this. Every priest whom I treated was in for being involved with children sexually had previously been involved in adult homosexual relationships. Now, please be very, very, very careful here. This is not equating every homosexual or the majority of homosexuals with this kind of abuse. But we do need to be aware of what is going on. So why has this occurred? Why did the church cover this up as well? I mean, the shame of the Catholic Church in this. The Pope has recently apologized, but is that sufficient? And it, in some areas of the United States, it's almost bankrupted. And incidentally, of course, it's not just the Catholic Church. There have been many situations in Protestant churches and in evangelical churches even, where people have used their position of power and used it to exploit and to abuse. And that is utterly, utterly sickening and shameful. But let me cite from the end of the article by Dr. Jules Gomez. The church's deadly cancer began in the theology department long before it reached the trouser department. It must be first corrected in the theology department, and it's imperative to ask candidates the most decisive question of all: do you love Jesus? I cannot see how anyone who loves Jesus would harm, and it is harm, and would abuse his children. Let's return to the question of euthanasia, and this time, instead of Belgium, let's go to Canada. And the horrendous story of a man called Roger Foley.
Roger Foley went from being active and healthy to disabled and helpless because of a rare neurological disease. For the past 2.5 years, he's been in hospital in London, Ontario, part of a healthcare standoff. He wants assisted home care. Instead, he says he's being offered a medically assisted death.
I have not received the care that I need to relieve my suffering and only been offered assisted dying.
A disabled Canadian man who is suing because he claims he was denied proper medical treatment and independent living services, but he has been offered euthanasia. And he has some tapes of these, which he has given.
And Foley is releasing audio tapes he took of what he says are two healthcare workers who keep raising that option when he talks about getting home care teams of his choosing.
Like if I had self-directed funding, then I'd be fine. But
if you weren't, you can just apply to get an assisted. If you want it in your life, like, you know what I mean? You don't have to do it in some dramatic manner. You can apply for assisted, you know.
He says, you can, the assistant says to him, you can apply to get an assisted if you want to end your life. Like, you know what I mean? He is in effect being coerced into euthanasia.
In the second, Foley is told he will be charged more than $1,500 a day if he doesn't go home, with the suggestion he can apply for the right to die.
What's the plan that you know of?
Roger, this is not my show. I told you my piece of this was to talk to you about if you had interest in assisted dying.
I'm just so saddened by this. Although every time I've debated this, and I find it really fascinating that also this happens, when you suggest that that might be the case, that there might be pressure put on people, they say no. And yet think about it. Obviously, it's going to be the case. Obviously, when hospitals are short of resources, when children sometimes are concerned about a lost inheritance, don't tell me that pressure is not going to be put on people to end their lives, to get rid of the economic burden, to get rid of themselves as a burden. This case is just one example of, I am sure, many.
You better think about what you're saying. You better think about the consequences of your actions.
Now let's move on to the whole question of freedom of speech. One of the great things about our modern world is the internet. When the internet arrived, we all thought it was going to be this great example and great provider of free speech, the opportunity to put across ideas that mainstream media would not do so. And for many of us, that has been the case. It allows me to do this blog and this podcast, rather, as well as my blog. And there are many others as well who will not get heard in mainstream media, but can be heard in different ways. But because Facebook and Google and Twitter and the major tech companies have such a monopoly, it's now become very, very dangerous. They are beginning to censor. And they'll do the kind of censorship that you think, well, that makes sense. So, for example, you don't want YouTube being used in order to encourage people to make bombs for ISIS. But they very quickly move from bombs for ISIS to hate speech. And what you'll find is that more and more people are being shut out. And people who, I think, who profess an orthodox Christian position may find themselves shut out as well. Now, my view is that there are lots of people who I strongly disagree with and who I find horrendous and blasphemous and many other things, but I leave God to judge them. I don't think that we have the right to shut down freedom of speech. And yet this is what's going to happen. And that's why I refer you to this speech from Rowan Atkinson, who, together with the Christian Institute and the secularists, allied themselves to warn against the governments in the United Kingdoms, the government's restrictions on freedom of speech.
The clear problem with the outlawing of insult is that too many things can be interpreted as such. Criticism is easily construed as insult by certain parties. Ridicule, easily construed as insult. Sarcasm, unfavourable comparison, merely stating an alternative point of view to the orthodoxy, can be interpreted as insult. And because so many things can be interpreted as insult, it is hardly surprising that so many things have been, as the examples I talked about earlier show. Although the law under discussion has been on the statute book for over 25 years, it is indicative of a culture that has taken hold of the programs of successive governments, that with the reasonable and well-intentioned ambition to contain obnoxious elements in society, has created a society of an extraordinarily authoritarian and controlling nature.
I honestly believe that there will come a time when it will be very hard to be able to speak the way that I do, or anyone who wants to speak what the Bible actually says, because it's far too easy for people to say, well, that's hate speech and it should not be allowed. It harms people and it should not be allowed. And what they define as hate speech is what they don't like.
That is what you might call the new intolerance, a new but intense desire to gag uncomfortable voices of dissent. I am not intolerant, say many people, say many softly spoken, highly educated, liberal-minded people. I'm only intolerant of intolerance. And people tend to nod sagely and say, oh, yes, wise words. And yet if you think about this supposedly inarguable statement for longer than 5 seconds, you realize that all it is advocating is the replacement of one kind of intolerance with another.
Let's return to Vicky Beeching again. And the reason we do so is purely and simply because she's ubiquitous on the media. Again, on Sky, on the television, and then on BBC on the Jeremy Vine show. And here's this incredible segment where, in arguing against what's deemed to be conversion therapy, she asks the question about whether the person she's discussing with, Mike Davidson, considers being gay to be sinful. And he answers directly, yes.
I think it's really harmful and damaging. And I think actually it's about going back to the actual roots of why anyone would seek these therapies out in the first place. And many of these people are actually coming from a religious background or a kind of sociologically, religiously influenced background that believes being gay is wrong or sinful. And I believe, Mike Davidson, if I could ask you directly, you actually do believe that being gay is a sin.
If you're asking me as a Christian, if you want to have a theological discussion, I'd be happy to do that. But the majority of people I deal with...
It's just a simple question, though. Do you believe that being gay is a sin? It's just a direct question, yes or no?
Of course I do.
Well, yes, I think that then underpins everything that you offer. And to me, that actually is incredibly harmful to say that the way someone is primarily wired is sinful. You've got vulnerable people seeking your services, and you're coming in with this incredible bias that believes that the way that person is made is actually an abomination to God.
Why is the way that someone is wired sinful? Well, I don't understand how anyone who reads the Bible could ask that question without understanding what the Bible actually says. Because the Bible says we're all wired to be sinful. We are all sinful. And you see, it may be that we could find a genetic predisposition towards alcoholism. Does that mean getting drunk is right? It may mean that we have a genetic predisposition towards violence. We're like a small child when we say, well, it's the devil made me do it, or it's the way I'm wired. As Christians, we believe that we can be set free from our wiring, if you like. The heart is desperately deceitful and wicked above all things. That's what the Bible says. The Bible tells us we are dead in sins and trespasses. And for Vicky to come on, or for anyone to come on, and then just simply say, well, look, the way that we are, how dare you say of any of us that the way that we are is wrong, is illogical. It's certainly unbiblical. It doesn't make any sense. And can I say this? I really think it is unloving. A few years ago, we had a lovely Greek lady come to stay with us. She was a dentist, and at the height of the Greek crisis, she was unable to get work. So she left her country. She left her family. Her husband was a teacher, and she came to work in Scotland. Her husband eventually joined her, as did the rest of her family, and they're now members of our congregation. Indeed, he's an elder. But I feel for their home country. This week we heard that Greek is officially out of its last bailout. Now please don't think that that is necessarily good news for the Greeks. These bailouts have cost the Greeks, the Greek nation, an absolute fortune. Now there are all different questions about who's to blame, but the bottom line is that largely it is the poor and it is the middle class in Greece who are paying for this. 40% of young people are unemployed. The unemployment rate overall is 25%. Pensions are down by at least 25%. Many Greeks have left their native country. The average age, the median age, has increased. And it looks as though it will take many years, if not decades, for it to recover. Now, what can we say about this? There are many things that we can look at, many things that we can examine. Who was to blame? The bankers, the ridiculous taxation system, the cheating, the dishonesty. But also the role of the EU, the role of the banking system, indeed the role of the whole economic system. It's so easily, it was a false boom. And we've now got this bizarre situation where there are still people who are multimillionaire Greeks who have their yachts and who have their houses in London and in Edinburgh, as well as in Athens. But the poor suffer because of the policies that made them wealthy. No matter your politics, you have to recognise and realise how wrong that is. And finally, let's round off where we came in with Aretha Franklin. My quote of the week from her: being a singer is a natural gift. It means I'm using to the highest degree possible the gift that God gave me to use. I'm happy with that. May God grant us all satisfaction in using the gifts that He has given us for His glory and not for our own selfish ends. Oh, and let me say to Christians, use the freedom that we have, which was bought at a great price, largely to develop freedom of religion. Use that freedom while we still have it. And above all, use it not to express hatred. Use it not to attack people. But let's use it to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. God bless you, and see you next week, hopefully on return from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yo. What? part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.